I think, of visions and not of utopias. But we can have this discussion about it. You can do the slides. Or I just show a few images to give an impression of different ways that architects and artists use the visionary model nowadays. The first slide is a painting by Madelon Friesendorp, which was on the frontispiece of Delirious New York. It's made in back in the 70s, and what she does, she draws the skyscrapers of New York as human beings. So what we see is the Empire State Building and the Chrysler Building that are caught in the act, so to say, by the Rockefeller Center. And what I think is interesting in this image is that these fluid, soft forms of the buildings, invented by an artist, nowadays become fashionable in buildings around the world. It's in that sense, it's a kind of visionary architecture. Next, please. From more or less the same age, some drawings by Levius Boots. It's a kind of radical anarchistic architect who made the ultimate decision for an architect, instead of sort of softening his work and his ideas, he decided to go on and just not to build. So this is of course a decision, a radical decision for an architect to take. His work is utopian, I think, and also dystopian, to stay in the words of Hans, which might have only the difference in color between brown and blue, but in the case of Levis Woods, it's usually black and white. Next. I also show, because this work has some resemblance of the models that I brought here by Frank Havermans, which is also hanging here in the air. And on the slide we see three models that Frank calls Toefoot, and then you can say more about it later, Frank, which are sort of studies for specific urban places and specific urban plans. I think in this case it's the Zuidas in Amsterdam, and the one is hanging here is Eiburg. And Frank makes a sort of reset or rethinks these places and shows us that the future of these places might be very different than what we expect now. Next. And then I go through it. Last two slides by two architects who sort of combine, other than Levis Woods, combine a building practice with making of visionary plans. This is an image by NL Architects. It's called the Power Flower, and it is clearly a kind of study. Yeah, it's pretty funny. I also think so. To give a different shape to the windmills that invade our country. And this is the first image in the slide, and that was technically not feasible. It's a vision, it's a concept. And then later they went on with this concept, and then they produced this model that I have here, which is a smaller version of the same idea. So this is more the size of a tree that you can put, let's say, in your backyard to generate your own electricity in your garden. Next, the last for this introduction is an image of the vertical village. This is an outdoor sculpture realized here in, not here, it's realized in Taiwan, in Taipei. And it's by M.K.R. Dave together with the Wire Factory. And Sebastian here is from the Wire Factory, so he can tell us more about this now. And this project is interesting because it's a sort of comment or sort of reaction on what is going on at the moment in Asian cities, where this enormous amount of high-rise buildings are momentarily being built and sweep away all the older forms of urban villages that we find there in the Asian city. So this project is basically a study to see whether it's possible to increase the density, I think, of the city, what is happening, but maintain the quality of the urban villages that are so
characteristics of the Asian city. An interesting analysis and an interesting project in my view, and we also have here a kind of working model of this same project. Okay, for me this is a sort of introduction on the models we have on the stage, and let's talk about it.
Thank you, Bastian. I was also curious, what role does failure play in your practice? Because most works you show are paper architecture. Do you consider that the failed architecture also annoying?
Yeah, well, the term failed architecture, I don't know. The older projects that I show, by Madelon, the older project by Rem Koolhaas, Lemmy's Woods, that is the generation, I think, of paper architecture. And the thing is that it was produced in the crisis that went on at that period of time, in the 80s, where there was absolutely no work for architects, and they started sort of doing this paper visions. And then later, you see that almost all of them start building. Except some of these weird guys like Lemmy's Woods. And maybe we find ourselves now in maybe a kind of similar situation in the next crisis.
For your business, more paper.
Which is looking way good for my business, but only the budget of people to buy art also diminish at the same time. So
I want to move on to someone who's maybe or maybe not also affected by this cycle. Van Havermans, an artist, but working with and from architecture. Is it on? Are we, do you hear us?
Yeah.
Yeah. Also the other mics? We can hardly hear each other.
We have a shout. Works, yes.
Van, welcome. You brought two models, as Bastian was explaining. Maybe we can walk up to them, and because I brought this magic device. Someone told me that it would work, so let's see if it does work. It's called an iPhone. And it doesn't work. Where is it? Ah, here it is. Since he was bringing these super detailed models, we were thinking that we would bring a camera. Yeah, okay, we just start. Maybe it will work. Come over.
The lines are not long enough. I only can
you get to here. This is turning into theater. Fun.
Yes.
What is this? What are we looking at here?
It's not paper architecture, but model architecture. That's a new age. Not paper architecture anymore. And this is one of my models, and this one as well, they were in front. This is the sketch model that goes in front of this black models. And I have a project that's called Tofut. And Tofut is actually, the letters are saying, a temporary office for urban development. So once in a while, when I find an artist in residence or I find an interesting place, I'm going to make new future perspective from the area where I'm interested in. For example, this is a Zuidas model, Amsterdam Zuidas, and this is an Eiberg model. This is on the floor plan of the island of Eiberg here in Amsterdam. Two Amsterdam projects.
And because we were discussing these models before, and you were saying that it started because of your frustration about these places.
Well, maybe not only frustration.
It works, but I will quit it anyway.
Not really frustration, but more often disappointment, you know, because when I heard about this Eiberg project first, and I was really, I was too late to really experience the big older projects and with the making of the new cities of Lelystad and all the other cities and villages. And suddenly I heard about this project Iberic, and I think they heard it for the first in the 90s, and they started making items. It was really, wow, this is cool. And when I came there the first time, I was really kind of almost finished at that time. I was really disappointed with what I saw, with this ambition and this, this future perspectives they were promising us, also in the advertising and everything. But the talk was really disappointing for me, because it was just a normal extension of the city to me. And also, well, the same actually for the Zuidas. This was really an ambitious plan, and these plans starting up really big and ambitious, and then halfway something happens, and then suddenly the project stops. And that counts for the Iberg project, but also for the Zuidas project. And that's rather disappointing. So I think when I throw up this, when I make the ambition a little bit higher, and not only thinking about the time of the building, about 20 or 30 years. Most of these kind of utopian projects are planned in 20 or 30 years. But when you go a step further, a step beyond of that, what will happen with them when it will grow about 100 or 200 or 300 years? Mm-hmm. What will it look like then? And, so these models are layered up with all these kind of notions. And it's made kind of intuitive. This Iberg project, the floor plans of Iberg are in it, and I started making a new three-dimensional model with it, and I kind of mirror image it and make more connections to the city. And in the end, it's also a piece of art. You know?
It's an educational. Or is there something we can learn from them by looking at them? If I was an urban planner and I was thinking of creating a new Iberg today?
Maybe more about this one, the Zuidas. What struck me most when I first came at the Zuidas project, I had a visit at the project bureau Zuidas in the WTC building. And there's a big model standing there. Presents the plan when the whole plan will be finished in 2030 something. It's a kind of white model with all Photoshop images around it, and it's really creating an ideal world what it will look like in 20, 30 years. But in the meantime, you know what happens. The crisis came. And another thing that they presented as an island. So actually, this model in the WTC building is presented to Zuidas as an island in Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. They disconnected from the real world, and they connected with the successful parts of the city, like the Beurs, Schiphol, all these kind of successful things. But the areas around was not really connected. What they wanted to do is also put the Heide under the ground, disconnected actually from the real city. And
how is that reflected in this model that we see here, which eventually led to something that you are trying to show here on the screen?
Well, actually, I did the opposite. This was very the first sketch model. I kind of lift up the roads, the real roads, kind of as a bypass.
I will show it here on the big screen, the eventual model. Hopefully, we can get there. That's it, right?
Talking about habits, those are kind of similar, but more free, more out. So when I can start making connections by building my road. And then you suddenly also have space to live in.
Do you ever show them to like the planners who are actually responsible for this area? And how do they respond? Did they respond at all?
Yeah, I've been working on the site for 5 months in the center there. And we had a show there, and I also built a really big model as a the counter model of the Zeithos model, of the white transparent Zeithos model, a big black one. And also people from the Zeithos team. And we had a nice discussion. Actually, I'm trying to throw up a discussion by these models. I kind of comment the plans of the city council and the city planner. So, well, it works because they always react or if I say things like this, they always try to defend that plan. So we have immediately had a discussion.
I think we will get back to this point of stirring up discussions by using models and visions and utopias. I want to move on to the Edwin. This one is important, so I'll put it here. Please. Because we're looking here at a tiny model, mock-up of something that is being built as we speak, but then the size of this stage, I imagine it.
Yeah, kind of. 2.5 by 2.5 by 6 meters high.
And what is it?
Well, it's the Kamermaker. We have a little movie, but I don't know if I can show it because maybe some people have already seen it. But actually, I was thinking maybe I can comment in the meantime because I hope we're going to have a bit of a discussion on the sofa. Mm-hmm. I can comment on Edwin. Because he was talking about the Homo Faber. Actually, I didn't know, I knew of the Homo Ludens, but I didn't know of Homo Faber. But I think that we kind of disagree there, because actually I think that our office dus architects, we really see ourselves as Homo Fabers, and we really like to do, and actually really empower people in the city to, again, really retake the seat, the streets, and really act in the city. And actually, in that sense, I really think it's a machine that we're going to build, because we're going to, maybe you can just run it in the meantime, because it doesn't have sound, right?
It becomes clear, yeah.
Because we posed some questions here that, you know, we want to experiment, tackle with this machine. But actually how we think of this machine is something that actually is going to empower the consumer again to really build things themselves, because we really live in a mass-produced society. And, I don't think you really, how many, furniture pieces do you use that actually have really been built by a proper carpenter?
Maybe we should first look at the video, but can you turn up the volume, or is it... really useful. Yeah, I could use one. But so this is being built, right?
Yeah.
This will actually happen.
Yeah, opening date September 16th in the north at the Torhuisduin.
So this is not paper architecture.
Well, right now it is, yeah, but this is being built. Yeah. We still have to build the print machinery. Right now we're testing with plastic. It kind of looks like toothpaste layers. I know that in September we want to have already, perfect homes coming out of the printer. That's the whole idea, that it's really kind of new craftsmanship that we have to research. And therefore what we want to do is to really provide a kind of open platform where really everyone can practice and test.
Mm-hmm. Because that's in responding to Edwin's remark about our loss of craftsmanship in a way, and he was showing the image of the printer. And what you're saying is now it is about appropriation or involving people in the process of creating architecture.
And it's funny because
we misinterpreted it.
Of course it's for propagation an image, but there's also, because just before this started, there was kind of also an interesting kind of back and forth here at the printer with Frank, right? It was just like, I can't imagine that I would work somewhere here and it would go out somewhere there. And this is what I mean with craftsmanship. So I don't think this is the same. This is not, has nothing to do with bodily intelligence. Another kind, this is still super brainy intelligence.
I don't know, right? I think right now it is, but I can imagine that already 10 years from now it will be very different. And it's actually really funny. I have pictures in random order, but last Sunday we had a birdhouse print event in our garden at our office. It was actually really interesting to see how the adults were totally amazed and confused, and what is this? And the kids, they didn't even, they weren't even surprised. They just started sketching with their finger on mouse pads, and then their drawings were printed, and they totally understood it. So I think that this whole notion of how much do you actually craft with, but maybe.
But is craftsmanship a criterion for assessing architecture? Should it be about craftsmanship?
The argument is there's more than just one type of intelligence, one type of behavior. And there's a tendency, especially with computers, with digital media, IT, whatever, that it's empowering shit of people. Everybody can do everything. But at the same time, it also discredits other types.
Yeah, but I think in that sense, I really think that you are very old-fashioned, because that has been happening already the last decades. And
don't you think it's a problem?
No, I disagree. Actually, I also think it's. I thought you have a really nice presentation, but I think it's also really interesting to notice now that plumbers, they make much more money than architects. There was a 70% job loss the last few years in architecture. But plumbers make shitloads of money. I mean, really, you should become a plumber right now. So I think
that because they like to work so much, they make so much money.
Who cares?
Fuck, I care.
Yeah, okay, but maybe this. I don't know. I mean,
but it's important that you enjoy your work, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is my main point.
Yeah.
It's not about how much money, because you and I make nothing. Or we make very little for how much we work, because we love what we do. It's our fulfillment. And this is the thing with this, let's call it the underclass or uneducated manual labor. They don't find fulfillment in what they do, and this is more than half of the population.
But Edwin, if I may interrupt me just briefly. We are talking about models for the future, and one way of looking at it is that we as a profession of architects would like the future inhabitants of the buildings to be involved more in the creative process. I think that is a thing that has been going on for quite some time now. You, in your video, you showed Archigram. It was also about being more playful with architecture, appropriating the architecture, having a flexible architecture. And this maybe is the next step. So it's not about you entirely building your own house, but it is, it comes close. So maybe if you, in that trajectory, do you think that is a that this is a step ahead or is it a step back?
I mean, I'm not against this or against progress. I'm just thinking when we move forward, we're losing things. And I think we should just make our picture a little bit bigger than just being super enthusiastic about all the new stuff. Because there's debris, there's also we leave stuff in our wake if we go forward, and this is not something to just step over. So we
Maybe for Hedwig, you've been working on this for quite some time now. Have you also been looking at other models, other architects that have been playing with this do-it-yourself mentality and these new tools that have become available?
Well, not really, but maybe you can just go through some images of the presentation. Or like the
go back.
I think I don't know if this is the first or the last slide. Maybe the beginning, because actually what triggered this debate in our office was we were invited by the next Baumeister to go.
This one?
The first 11, basically. Because I just copy-pasted a few things. It's just, you can just go randomly through it.
Okay,
but maybe it's interesting to show a diagram on the fourth or fifth slide or something. But the beginning of last year, we were invited by Rijks Bouwmeester to do a proposal for the United Nations building, the Dutch Delegates Lounge in New York. Actually also with MVRD and OMA. OMA won in the end, unfortunately. But we worked together with a product designer, Joris Laerman, and that actually was really educational to us because we really started this debate about open design, open source product design, and how it actually might revolutionize the world. And actually in the 1950s, when the United Nations was founded, there was really a belief in mass production as something that would really, you know, empower the world. Everyone could get products, etc. And what you see now is that it's really resulted in this cheap labor in China, you know, and all these disadvantages that we have because we have high production or like, you know, long travel costs, no local produce anymore. And what we think now is that what we see now is that actually just there might be kind of a new revolution where via these kind of machineries, actually people here in the Netherlands who don't produce anymore anything at all can again produce and build and make the things that they actually want to use. And we were wondering, okay, this is already starting, this discussion is already starting in product design, but in architecture, this is not really the case at all. And then our office already for a long time, we've been building temporary projects, temporary installations, and then always after a while demolishing it again, which is not really durable. So we start to think about what if we make a kind of traveling building that can actually go to a context and then respond to the context by basically shitting out a new building and then, you know, relocate and, well.
Because the shape of the object, in this case, but the building eventually is based on what?
Well, actually it has already changed several times because this is also kind of a new design process for us because we first just started to make movies and really make a lot of, you know,
fuzz.
So that we could get people to become interested. Ultimaker, they are our biggest partner. They make these do-it-yourself printers. They're one of the leading builders of these machines. They're a Dutch firm. Super nice guys, and they like the idea, so we're collaborating with them. So they're helping us to basically build a large machinery like this. And it's all rather low cost. We also want to make something that people, you know, in India can reproduce and build themselves. And it's based on container. I'm totally not into container architecture, but we just have to be pragmatic. It's a cheap structure that we can dismantle and then build this machinery in. And in the rendering movie, it's still horizontally, but actually now what we're going to do is we're going to build a mini skyscraper, so it's going to be vertical.
And what are you expecting from the architectural quality of the output? I mean, will it be on the cover of architecture magazines or?
I don't know. I'm actually, this is weird to say, but I'm actually not that interested in aesthetics. I do have this kind of fascination. It's another image somewhere in here, but in the Amsterdamse school. And I have this vague hope that actually this kind of machinery will bring us again to real craftsmanship and ornament in architecture, because you can really again make unique architecture. You're not forced to work with the same brick. Actually, Brian, who's working in our office, he's now doing a crazy nice project in Brabant at the ceramic center, where he's printing ceramic bricks, and every brick is different. And it's just as easy to do that than to make just, you know, all the same bricks. So I really think that it's going to lead to very interesting architecture. I think only at first what's going to come out of this, yeah, it's a start. But next
year... But can you imagine that the outcome is less desirable than you imagine it to be now, in terms of the diversity of the designs?
Well, it is, the interesting thing is that this is actually really going to, again, sort of... raise the discussion of the quality, importance and the quality of design, because in a way everyone can become a designer, but obviously not everyone is a good designer. So then what is a good design? And you know, I mean, now you go to Gamma and you buy a garden shed, but next year everyone can print their own garden shed. And how will this shed look? You know,
they all look different.
Yeah, or orange, or maybe everyone's going to buy a Yanzu template, and you know, they'll all the same, you don't know, but I think that's a really interesting experiment.
Mm-hmm. And can you also imagine it to be scaled to the size of a city? Could we print cities in the future? Just scan Amsterdam and just project it anywhere else in the desert and then print it there?
I don't know. I think another very important element of architecture is actually permanence and history. So I think that it's really nice that there are buildings that already have been somewhere for 500 years. So I think it's going to be very much about the combination of the two temporary structures against very long, solid, beautiful buildings.
And maybe also relating back to Frank's work, he's holding up a mirror saying to the people who designed the Zuidas and Eiberg, what you've done is bad quality architecture. How will this help us to prevent that from happening again? Could this solve that problem?
No, and I'm an architect. I actually think that everyone who manages to build something, I already give great credit to these people, you know, because I don't think that there's really bad architecture. I just think that this might help to... I think it can be a tool for people to really, literally and figuratively more, again, build their own city. I think it's going to be an attachment to larger systems.
It's fascinating. So I'm just thinking out loud now, because maybe in the end it will be a battle between who owns these machines, right? Or
yeah.
Who builds them?
Yeah, but...
Who sets the specifications or the variables?
I think it's going to be more about the computer programs and the source of the material. So what is
that? Because in a way they're like Facebook also. I mean, to a certain degree you're free to do what you want, but there are certain regulations.
Yes and no, because everyone can make this machinery, and also the Kamermaker. When we have the whole design done, it's going to be open source available on the web. So if you want, you can also build it yourself. It's just going to take a long time, but you can do it. So I think it's more going to be about what kind of computer coding do you use and what kind of materials do you put in. I mean, in the future, we won't have so much oil anymore, so there's going to be a shortage of plastic. But perhaps we can start printing with sand, or you know. So it's going to be more about what you put in the machine.
But do you? I mean, this is half speculation and half dreaming. But do you really believe that this will happen, like on a large scale? If you were to have 5 million euros, would you invest your money in a company that would build these machines?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I want to move on to bus because there is a lot of there are a lot of similarities, I guess, in the approach to architecture. This idea of flexibility, re-engaging residents or inhabitants, and also the parallel to software and how software is developed. Because you've been working on for the Wine Factory, you produce this fantastic book. I really would like to recommend it, Vertical Village. Well, maybe first of all, you can say a bit more about what Vertical Village is before we move on to the village maker. There's definitely another wireless office here.
Let's see, we have a short presentation maybe?
Yeah.
Otherwise we would be lost in abstractions where visually it's fairly simple. Basically, one of the questions being asked in the office, and we are at the Wine Factory, where it's about master planning and what and why do we need it. One of the outcomes is basically the Village Maker, where it is proposed to use software as a gathering tool of all rules and regulations, where it is built in an open source software. It's built in Grasshopper Rhinoceros. Basically, what we came up with.
What's the rhinoceros?
It's rhino. Really, software rhino, and it has this scripting component, so you can basically script your actions. What it does basically, it enables you to gather parameters and upload info. Importance to them. So you can, in a simple or a rather simple way, you can manage a lot of complex things. Where basically it's based on two settings, the core settings on which are used for the bounding box of the whole village, and the user settings which is used for the single user basically. The first thing is select your family and building of the house, so you can basically like the house or the room maker, you can select and print your house. But what's funny is basically, or what we find interesting, I shouldn't say funny, it's the thing where you can upload basically a core settings of sun cones and view cones. Sun cones you can discuss, basically you can see it on the right. And the big yellow corner, or the triangle, where the sun cone basically is being used as a cut through the whole volume of the whole village. The view cone enables you to either have a room with a view, or it enables you to have a minimum distance to your next neighbor. By making use of such sort of basic parameters, you can have an interesting mix of density, discussion on the periphery of your house, who wants to be your neighbor, and basically when do you need your neighbor? Do you need it in order to create a square, or do you need it in order to create amenities, or is it just everyone for themselves? What's interesting furthermore is that you, in this making use of this software, is that you, by abstractizing and parameterizing both all the regulations, you enable people basically to be free again in a way, which is an interesting notion, where the moment when all the rules and regulations are in a way gathered in a software, you no longer have to really think about them.
It's a computer model,
yes,
that enables you to not design the perfect village, but to develop certain scenarios,
yep,
and different options for a perfect village based on your own demands.
Well, the whole question is, what is a perfect village? And I'll get later back to that. basically the whole script. What we did was running some tests where we said, okay, we can now investigate certain parameters. So we can say, okay, we have a sun, we switch off the possibility to have a sun cone. So we switch off the possibility to have a view cone. And it kind of brings us the maximum density scripted like this. The whole project was basically coming up with a dream of having this bow-like city, which you can see in the blue model. But during the design process and the scripting process, the interesting thing is that you can then analyze what is wrong with this one or good with this one. The density is very good, so you can have a lot of amenities in public program maybe. The bad thing is that it's absolutely not at all in any regulations sunlight proof, as you can see with this. And the more sun and the more comfort you basically spatially apply to your to this model, the emptier it gets. So what we find is that you basically design a discussion model on demands and spatial qualities. What is basically what you want to surrender in order to get to qualities? Do you want basically a 15-minute sunlight at exactly 5:15 in the afternoon till 10 or something, or do you want to have really a high density with a lot of nightclubs and everything? So it's this discussion model based on urbanistic and architectural parameters.
It's also kind of a bit disappointing, because if I was to be invited to be involved in the process, you would be telling me that there is no perfect village. You always have to make a compromise, right?
Well,
it's not how the Zuidas is being sold at the moment.
No,
that is the perfect business district. So
it's perfect. It's only perfect in the eye of the beholder, basically.
Yeah. That's
maybe an interesting question also for Hans here. The question occurs to me, is this an utopian project or is it a vision, in your words, Hans? What do you think?
Well, I think this is a vision, not utopian. It's just very, in the end, very, very pragmatic. But the way you discuss it, if you change the parameters, you get something else. And when I heard that, the enthusiasm of Hedwig about printing technique, that's much more closer to something which it's at least idealistic, and maybe also utopian. But the way you're talking about it, for me,
it's algebra or
a vision.
Okay. No, it's might be interesting. Why? It's basically the vision is a high dense, well-knit urban village stacked together, but with maintaining all qualities in which we gained up till so far.
And is there a fundamental reason for this density?
Yes.
What is it?
Fundamental reason for density or for this density?
This density.
Well, it acts on the premise where we found out in Asia at least to have a certain phenomenon called block attack, where all residents are sort of moved into high-rise apartments, while at the same time being the close-knit relationships between families are destroyed. So we were wondering is it possible that you can live together in a evolutionary manner? Can a 3D structure grow evolutionary with maintaining all these qualities of urban life? I don't know whether that's utopian. And
but is there anything collective here? Because the way you describe it, you mentioned you can decide how close you want to be to your neighbor. At first I thought it was a person, but later on I was thinking your neighbor is a volume next to you, not a person.
No, the volume is being bought by a person. And the person also designs his own house in a housemaker, which is then being uploaded to the village maker. And while designing your house, you decide how many hours or minutes of sunlight you want, what you find comfortable, and what you can pay. So it's a mix of finding it or finding a way to make it feasible, and a way to discuss this clash of demands, where we say, okay, we want high density living as a society, maybe not this one, but at least in Asia, for example, Tokyo or Beijing or Shanghai. People want to live together in order to provide also social structures like clubs and cinemas and town halls and everything, which is a result of density. Otherwise, a lot of things cannot be paid for.
Have you been looking at more historical examples of high density building and also this idea of vertical village? Hans is moving to Montreal. Habitat, Moshe Safdi did something there, very remarkable, already back in the 60s, that looks very similar to what you're doing here.
Say the 67.
No, it seems to be, at least from this side of the ocean, pretty successful, but then if you look at the Smithsons, what they've been doing in the UK around the same time, the streets in the sky, that failed completely. Most of the buildings are now being demolished. Is that something you have in the back of your mind when you work on these models, or you start from scratch?
Well, it's kind of hard not to have them in the back of your mind when you know them. So you cannot switch your mind off. Of course, yes, you have them in the back of your mind. But at the same time, you try to have this sort of critical naivety within it, so you try to keep an open mind in how to solve this riddle, maybe. How can we have perfect society? Is that the case then? I don't know.
That's a good ambition.
Maybe if I may add something to this. Most projects which suggest at least a utopian dimension, they are about collective, and in their images they somehow represent this idea of collectivity. And I like this model very much, but for me it's not representing collectivity, but much more the definition of society as it was proposed by Margaret Thatcher, that there is no such thing as society, only individuals and their families. Because this is, it looks like something for individuals and their family.
But Hans, couldn't it be that this is a kind of utopia 2.0? I mean, also utopias develop maybe in the 21st century. You refer back to the old examples, and well, as we see in the model that is being made there right now, is we are entering a kind of a new hyper individual age maybe, where also these utopian visions are more kind of sort of bottom-up fantasies instead of top-down.
Do you agree? Also?
Or is that virtually impossible? Is it a utopia always collective?
Well, in my definition, yes, because otherwise it's a model for society, and if it's based on the individual, then if this is the vision between future and the future avenue, it's, it cannot be totally individual, according to me.
No, but it's funny because this model is not necessarily about individuality. It has individuality in it, and a lot of individuality. And I had a previous discussion where with somebody from the U.S. where the discussion was about whether it was a libertarian vision or it was or whether it was present in the social realm. First, we found out basically that libertarianism in Europe is something completely different than libertarianism in US, where in US it's basically the very simple notion of get off my property, and here it is having the notion of thinking about yourself as the prime engager of action, which was a small detour, but it is about living together and by focusing on the single self, where, if I may continue, where we found out, well, where we basically made this investigation into how it can evolutionary growth structures. And why I'm continuing is because in the end we have a preview of the green plates, which are these models. And those green plates, basically, what they can do is, within the whole structure, provide social activity. So you can have still maintain your high density 3D living while you're having a lot of open space or public space, which you can basically set up yourself. So you can decide with neighbors whether you want to live on a square or whether you want to live on a quiet street where you can teach your children how to ride a bicycle, or whether you want to have a party district with a lot of discotheques and young people around you, which is, I don't know, something, whether it's visionary or utopian, I consider it pretty practical to think about it in a manner where you use these different notions of sun cones and view cones in order to have your quality of living at the same level as we have today.
Does it work?
Because I we're running late, as always, but it's interesting. But I want to do one final round of questions, and I have the same. I think we have a separate film somewhere. It's in here. Here. Oops. I should stay away from technology, that's one thing for sure. Anything else that comes close to... Which one?
This one.
I was curious because we're all from a certain generation, let's say. Edwin was also referring to it, the future is kind of bleak, maybe. We're in the midst of a huge recession or crisis. Is this paper architecture in the sense that for lack of like real projects, we tend to focus on these more speculative things, and once the economy kicks in again, we start building just mediocre buildings. You will never do that, but will it be business as usual? Will you become like the regular architect working for clients making buildings? Or will this stay part of your practice?
Well, it always has been part of the practice of MVRDB. And as I recall, they started with besides building VPRO building, but with Pharmax and doing studies into Skycar City, and then they came with Game 3, which is not something you do you can pay for when you don't have buildings that pay for your research. But it's a sort of a fundamental part of the office in order to provide sort of knowledge in a free way to get to a new point. For example, this software or this practice is being used, small parts of the software, small notions of this of the sun cones is being used in the master plan in Bordeaux. I don't know whether you might have seen it on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
It's this highly colored overview or urban plan in on the north side of Bordeaux somewhere, and it uses this sort of intelligence of sun cones in order to provide maximum building envelopes. So within that sort of set of regulations, there is freedom to build and to do and to build balconies or whatever.
So this more speculative research feeds back into the actual building process of the office.
Yeah. Yeah.
And do you see how do other offices respond? Are people adopting it? Will this become the new standard?
Might be interesting. Basically, with
is
this...
Is it open software, by the way?
Yeah, Grasshopper is open software. We haven't released the source code yet, but we first want to optimize it.
Hmm.
And... But what's fascinating for me is that it can incorporate all the building regulations and by then, in a sort of way, solve this notion of where the architects are like, indeed, maybe the plumbers and they... So you have this sort of basic fundamental layer of regulations on sunlight entry, on spatial, on distances between neighbors and everything, which can incorporate European regulations, maybe, I don't know. And then again, yeah, talk about what we really like to talk about, which is society and how to make beautiful things. And at least for me, that's the incentive of the whole project.
And Hedwig, will you be seeing yourself making these things? I mean, you gained quite some fame for your adventurous, more ephemeral type of architecture, and this fits into that picture in a way, but it's also moving more towards tangible and more durable, maybe. Is this, will this stay part of your practice in the coming years?
I thought you made a very funny comment, because you said, will in a few years after this, when this is over, will we go
it
back
will,
to normal?
Will never be over.
And actually, in that sense, I'm a great fan of your story, Edwin, because I actually think that in Europe, we have to consider the idea of stillness. And we are so in the Netherlands, you know, brought up with this idea of growth. But how much buildings do we really need? Unless you want to build in China, like MVRDV does. But our office is not interested in that. I mean, we like to work in Amsterdam, in the Netherlands, and do occasionally nice things abroad, but not big things. So I really think that this is the future, at least in Europe. And
maybe we need a dismantling machine.
No, I think I think we need a kamermaker, and I think we need architects that, because actually it's funny, most people know us for these temporary things, but we really have our roots in process design and large social housing projects, and we really also see this as a smart business case, because what we always do is we build these temporary structures, host temporary events within these larger urban transformation projects that we do. The only thing is that they take like super long. We just built a large apartment block. It took 6 years. So what we do is we have you know, we use architecture also as a tool in the meantime to engage the community, etc., etc. So I think that it's very much about the interplay of permanent architecture and impermanent architecture.
How permanent or temporal is the intention of a structure like this?
The thing is going to print, the printed object or the...
The printed.
That can vary from a few months. If you use bioplastic, that actually is going to dissolve when it rains. Until, I don't know, if you use regular plastic, you know, I think it can last a pretty long time.
Hey Frank, will you still be this youngish, angry man?
I'm not angry at all. But you said, will architects go back to architecture again after this crisis is over? And I don't think making buildings is making architecture. Making models, making thoughts, making research can be more architecture than making buildings. So I think these kind of things are interesting to find out new things, things in a different way, and the future will.
It's a blessing in disguise in that sense.
Yeah, most buildings
we're
are
not
built
building that, that law.
Most buildings that are built are not even architecture, so. These small things making models
are super important.
Maybe Bastian, one last comment. As a former architect or future architect?
No, I agree with Frank. These models we brought on the stage, I see as a kind of laboratory work. I'm also an urbanist, and imagine how fast the city changed in the last decades or the last century. We have no idea where we are going. So all of these projects sort of look ahead, and that's what architecture is always about. You stand with one leg in the history and with one leg in the future, because you mentioned you built an apartment block in 6 years. That's the way it is. Architecture is an extreme slow activity, and then after 6 years it only begins the life of the building. So the only thing, the basic thing that an architect has to do is always making plans for the future. It is inescapable. That's what the essence of the profession is. And we don't know how this future is going to look like. Not one vision ever came true. But all these experiments sort of give a kind of small view.
They're successful failures.
Yeah. Oh.
We are also moving ahead. This was the end of this edition of Field Architecture. We are going on a long holiday, but we're returning to this space in September the 26th.